Dangerous delivery towards the spot, it's in! And it's Pat Hooven, who else?
Line cutting in off the right side, has another shot! Oh! Jack Byrne with another incredible goal for Shamrock Rovers!
Here is Mandrew, is that kind of position? Oh, what a goal! What a goal from Danny Mandrew!
Hello there, it's League of Ireland Weekly, Series 4, Episode 5. We're on the television, the usual podcast platforms, and we're also on YouTube. Plenty of action from the weekend, a disappointing Dublin derby, Rovers' winning start of the season continues, and King Billy slays the Rebels in Inchicore. Later in the show, we'll have St. Pat's Director of Football, Ger O'Brien, but I'm delighted to be joined, as ever, by Daniel McDonnell, and we also have Johnny Ward from the Petri dish that is Prestbury Park. Johnny, how's life over in Cheltenham?
I mean, I might be accused of being biased, but like you're already editorialising the Shells Bowes result into a disappointing Dublin derby.
Oh, I was just going to say that as well. It was a very striking, there was no context provided.
It wasn't a great football match. In the 90 minutes of football, it wasn't ideal.
How do you think you would have introduced it if Shells had nicked it with a 98 minutes? I did it in Cork.
I'm judging this in the context of football. And the football on show was probably hampered by the pitch, which wasn't ideal. And as a spectacle for the viewing public, we're trying to promote the League of Ireland here, as always, and it wasn't ideal. Okay, and I think you have to agree with me on that.
We sort of believe you. Johnny, do we believe him? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, like, in fairness, you know, I was tweeting about Roddy Collins. He was given out about this game. Apparently he said he left at half-time now. I'm not sure I'd take Roddy all that seriously, but Pat Finlan called this last week. He said the pitch was going to be problematic. It was very problematic. You're not going to play a Dublin derby like that on a pitch like that. You're not going to be playing champagne football in a game that was very, very important for both sides as well. Bowes haven't had a great start prior to that, and I didn't think it was that bad a game. I thought there was a lot of quality about the two goals. So Tordek's header for Wright's goal was absolutely brilliant, the ingenuity of it, and it wasn't a bad game. It wasn't a great game. It wasn't necessarily the worst game I've seen. The pitch is bad. We have a lot of problems in this country at the moment, and one of them is the quality of some of the surfaces in Ireland after all the rain we've had. But once the pitch has improved, so will the football.
Hopefully, anyway. Plenty of football to talk about, but Johnny, you are at Cheltenham. What is the mood over there at the moment? Is it sombre in any way? Is anyone concerned about COVID-19 hanging over their heads?
Yeah, like there is a slightly strange mood around the place. I think anyone who's drinking, obviously, is just enjoying themselves. They're just like, they've probably forgotten about all the troubles in the world, including the coronavirus. But, you know, I know of a couple of journalist friends who decided to go home early. I had two friends who were to come over here who decided not to come. One has an elderly mother, one has a young son. And to be honest, I'm very blasé about health scares and all that, but this is a little bit different. I think, you know, the more you read into it, the more concerned you are. And being honest, I've basically written a piece there saying I don't think Brazen should have gone ahead this week. But at the same time, I hope League of Ireland might be okay in some shape or form, because obviously our crowds aren't that big. But maybe even if it's behind closed doors, because there would be so many ramifications if the football were just cancelled for a month.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, this is coming at us fast. I mean, there was a meeting today with the FAI, the PFAI, and the clubs. And there is a feeling, as it stands, that the games will go ahead this weekend. But closed doors football would have disastrous implications for the league. It's not an option as it stands without financial commitments from, I think they're going to have to seek it from UEFA, possibly government, in terms of ring fencing some money that's coming their way, which is meant to go towards development. But closed doors just doesn't work in the League of Ireland. This is the situation. And the argument for even playing games this weekend, I think you can have a debate around it, because League of Ireland stadiums aren't necessarily equipped to cope. I mean, we can joke all we want about like social distancing and whatnot, and but it's gone beyond like a sort of joking matter now, really. Someone has died, in the country now. And you look at a lot of our stadiums where facilities to wash hands, facilities to I mentioned Talca Park, and I'm not just saying it because I'm sitting across from you, but as you know parts of the stadium are closed off, so those that are there are going to be congested quite close together. But it's gone beyond that now. We're talking about games, which is a very I suppose that's what people's engagement with it would be. But I know that now that one of the big debates and one of the discussions that's going to be brought up in this daily task force is the amount of teams in this country that train in communal facilities, that train in gyms, that train in colleges and ITs. I think already, I gather in rugby, you know, Munster they're in UL, they've moved to Thomond Park. So clubs will have to look at training in their stadiums. And I mean, that's easy said. That's easier said than done. You know, some facilities aren't necessarily equipped for that, the pitchers are battered and bruised, and I mean, this is obviously something that's bigger than all of us, bigger than all of that, but they're going to face probably unprecedented decisions here. And I know that it's been pretty much acknowledged, even outside Ireland, that leagues such as our one, where clubs are basically reliant on gate receipts and only got the license to play in the league on account of budgets that are drawn from gate related income, the idea that you can just go behind closed doors for a month and survive is just not realistic. Liverpool can go behind closed doors for a month and survive. You know, clubs that make massive amounts of money from TV can do that, but in this league they can't. So this is going to need strong leadership now. And look, with all these things, of course, you know, sporting bodies can get together and have discussions or whatever, and then government will come in and make a ruling that, you know, that supersedes and hangs over all of that. So they're going to have to be prepared, and I think there's a lot of discussions going on. This is a very real thing, and I think, you know, the games may well go ahead this weekend, but I think beyond that we're looking at a stoppage, I think.
So Johnny, what is the alternative then? Closed doors doesn't work. Is it just a blanket ban for fixtures for the foreseeable future?
I don't know. I mean, is there any way that the clubs could set up some sort of a streaming service for fans to watch the games? I don't know. Dan might know more about that in terms of a short gap solution where fans would actually just pay to watch the game basically on a stream. I think they might be able to. Obviously, a couple of clubs have trialled that already in League of Ireland. But I spoke to Brian Kavanagh, the Horse Racing Ireland CEO, today in the parade ring, and he's basically saying, well, it's all down to the government. You know, the HSE issued a fairly stark tweet today, the HSE CEO. This is completely out of my comfort zone. I've no idea what's going to happen with this. But obviously, football is a small matter. It's just the people who would have come over to Cheltenham this week and who may have elderly parents or, you know, may have young kids, they now have a situation where they know that it's possible they're carrying a coronavirus that they won't know about for a week or two, and the possibilities that entails, it's actually quite frightening. So I don't think I've really taken in the repercussions of this, but whatever happens, it's going to be pretty disappointing. I've no idea what the answer is, and it's something the League of Ireland obviously could do without at this stage.
Yeah,
I think there has to be, though, a lot of foresight in this, in terms of football is obviously insignificant when it comes to such serious health matters. But we saw in the 2000 season with the foot and mouth crisis that Longford ended up playing 4 matches in 10 days. 5 days later, they play an FA I Cup final, which they lose. So you have to plan it out properly, that if you are going to put back the season, or if there is going to be a blanket ban on fixtures, you're going to have to see when are we going to play these rescheduled matches.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of a streaming service is well-intentioned, but again, that will favour bigger clubs. Smaller clubs, you know, might be reliant on... I just think there's too many variables there that I like the idea in theory, but in practice I don't think that's equitable in such a way that it's going to fill the gap. We do have a pretty dysfunctional league in terms of fixtures, as we know, and that might leave some room for manoeuvre if you had to stoppage. I'd be in favour of a stoppage personally rather than
for
a closed doors continuation. I mean, well, it's just the thing. It's a fair point, Shane. I don't know. None of us can really know. Mm. We can predict. Do you take a strong action for 2 weeks and hope that you return to normality after that? But I guess what if you don't? And as I said, none of us are health experts here, so we probably shouldn't be speculating too much on that. But I guess what we do have later in the season, if you want to bring it back to our world, and we know it's not as important as what's going on here, but just we have to talk about it, what might happen. You know, you might have to look at, I see it's been floated, the idea of getting rid of the League Cup, playing games on Mondays. We have this situation later in the year where you have
the first game there, Dan. No.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a, you know, some things might just have to go, John. I think you have the FAI Cup weekends later in the season, which, as we know, I mean, as it stands, Sligo Rovers don't have a home game for 5 weeks at some stage. So, you know, you could slot games in there. You could move the cup to Mondays and move the league games to weekends, so that if teams get knocked out, it's not as much of a disruption. There's, I mean, people are going to be unhappy with whatever is proposed. You look at extending the season, of course, which is something that arguably should be done anyway. But I mean, all the players in the league at the moment have contracts that say end of the season. Mm. I don't think that will happen without assurances that the money will be, the costs of doing that. And of course, it's not just player wages, which are substantial, but there's also other running costs as well, full-time staff, employees at clubs, people like that. And I mean, there's a lot of things about this league that aren't ideal. I mean, you hear anecdotal tales of clubs paying in cash, people are in amateur terms and expenses and whatnot. When it comes down to it, everything has to be pretty much laid down firmly. What are your costs? I know that the FAI are going to go off and do a projection on each club and how much each individual club relies on gate income and whatnot. But, I mean, people might have contracts that are heavily appearance-based, for example. So there's just, when you actually dig down into it, I don't think you've even scratched the surface of the implications and the angles that you have to consider. And what we are dealing with here is something for our league that leaves it extremely vulnerable. And I don't think you can, do you have to do things like, you can't really knock around the games off the season because clubs would have got projections on 18 home matches or 19 home matches or done season tickets and whatever on that basis. So we're talking here now on Wednesday. Mm. Who knows where we're going to be next Wednesday.
Johnny, we talk about a rejigged FAI. Does the leadership now that we have at the moment, is it strong enough to make these important decisions?
I have absolutely no idea. I think it's far too early to say. It's funny, I met Paul Cook, who obviously was the interim CEO or interim deputy CEO or whatever he was after John Delaney's departure. I met him on the way in.
Vice president now still, yeah.
Yeah, and we were having a bit of a laugh about obviously Watford having a big win at the weekend, but I honestly don't know. I think, at a bigger level, I think this is an opportunity for the government, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and the Greens to quickly just form a government. I think it's actually quite, in a sense, convenient for them because people just need, they just need a government now. They need things to happen. This is obviously a massive issue for the FAI, and I think all the clubs would wish them the best in it, but as to whether the FAI is equipped enough to deal with this, on the basis of our experience with the FAI, it's not really equipped to deal with anything. But at all,
okay, yeah, connection's not great there. Yeah. Dan, you mentioned UEFA. Is there money that UEFA can subsidise the FAI anyway?
I think that's what's been explored. I mean, UEFA do have a pit of money. It's not ideal for the FAI to be doing that in the context of a year where they've gone to to UEFA already, but they won't be the only league in that boat. I mean, we see what's happened with Linfield, where a player has actually tested positive, and so there's obviously, they're further down the road. And I just gather from speaking to people today that, there'll be the 10, 12, 15 leagues in Europe that are really going to be affected. And I guess, what does a governing body of a sport exists for, only to be able to deal with a crisis such as this? There is solidarity payments. The fear, of course, is that money that could be used for other things gets diverted here. But I mean, this is an emergency for some of these clubs, and there are people's livelihoods and jobs at stake. It's as I said, there's they are the real concerns. They're secondary to people's health, of course. But every small business in the country now has to somehow look at this and see how they're going to cope with it. And the small businesses that are our league clubs are no different to that.
Is there enough communication between clubs that we, as a league, can be proactive as opposed to reactive?
Well, I mean, they've had a meeting today. They're having daily meetings with representatives of the FAI, the league and the league clubs and then the players. I mean, I guess they're having a daily meeting. They're reviewing it on a daily basis. You would hope so. I mean, of course, again, one of the aspects of this league, that you'll have clubs that pay 52-week professional contracts versus clubs that pay 36 to 40-week amateur contracts. So there's not a one-size-fits-all solution necessarily. I mean, and that's obviously one of the complications that you would face. Mm. But you asked the question to Johnny about leadership, and that's, of course, what you need. Now, I know that all football bodies have the problem that they can show X amount of leadership, but the government are making these decisions about whether cultural and sporting events go ahead. So, the FAI could in theory lay out, well, this is what we're going to do, and then get a phone call from government buildings, a couple hours later, and it's rendered irrelevant. So, that is the problem that they face. So, I mean, from what I gather today, and it may change tomorrow, and it may change on Friday, there's no indication from government the games this weekend will be affected. But I think there's no real certainty beyond that.
Certainly a serious conversation, and it's a case of wait and see. Apologies for Johnny's abrupt departure there. Clearly hasn't paid for his data. We will be chatting football in part two, and St. Pat's Director of Football, Ger O'Brien, will be with us. Hello again, League of Ireland Weekly, Season 4, Episode 5. The ever-present Daniel McDonnell is still with me, and I'm delighted to be joined by St. Pat's Director of Football, Ger O'Brien, and also Air Sport pundit now.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy yourself at the weekend up at the showgrounds?
Yeah, bar the rain. It was a really good game, to be on, in fairness, loads of goals. It was a decent performance by Shamrock Rovers, although they might have got a little bit, during the game at them, but having a look back, you know, it was difficult to try and break down Sligo, but they managed to get the win in the end.
Going up to Sligo, I believe it's the only away ground that Stephen Bradley hadn't won as a manager. It's Rovers now, best start of the season since 1965. What do you make of the Shamrock Rovers start of the season?
Yeah, barring the Dundalk game, I think they would be expected to win all the games, and even and that's even in Daly Mount as well against Bowes. I think they've kicked on right from probably the last half of last season, and then obviously getting the cup final win against Dundalk would have taken a big pressure off them at the start of this season. The fixtures have been kind to them as well, Cork at home and Waterford. They've managed to go and get good victories there, which is... But listening to Steve McPhail even after the game the other night, he said it's only a platform for them to go and build on. The May last year, they might have been 10, 12, 13 points clear. So yeah.
Johnny Ward will never forget how far they were.
Yeah, it shows how quick they can get reeled in by a very, very impressive Dundalk side, and they're breathing down their necks.
Mentally, how big a win was it? Because, I mean, they've gotten over the Bowes hoodoo's gone, they've gotten over Dundalk now a couple of times, and Sligo, you know, they were a bogey team for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've won all these games with late goals. I mean, I know what was the McInniff goal, sort of 72, 73, or in that sort of territory. So, yeah, they've had probably setbacks in all of the games, and they've come back out on top of all of them. So, I guess it is. I mean, I suppose it is early days. Like, you're wary of making dramatic statements about this is their year, you know, or this is the, you know, this. But again, I think what they've done is they've probably shown they've a bit more depth to the squad, and even... For example, they tried something with Gaffney and Green up front together. Didn't work. Able to sort of mix things up, bring in Dylan Watts and sort of overload that midfield a bit more, and they got out of it. They problem solved, I guess. And they are the things that they take something from. I took something a bit different from the game. I didn't think Sligo Rovers were that bad. I know that considering they're missing so many players, they're missing like a lot of players.
Defenders
especially. They have to bring on their new striker, De Vries, almost as a midfield player. I saw Cork on Friday and I saw Sligo Rovers on Saturday. And you look at Sligo and they still think when everyone's back, they have experience around the league. And I think they might actually be okay in the end. I mean, I think they're going to be probably down there just because it's very obvious to see. But, you know, they still put it up to Shamrock Rovers. You know, they had a period after half-time where you're thinking, God, could we be on for a shock here? And then Rovers got on top of it, of course. But I don't know. I don't know what you meant of Sligo, Ger. You know Liam very well. So it's they're still going to have a tough season. Yeah. But I don't know. I was stuck some weird encouragement from it given all the absences they had.
Yeah, I think he needs his players back. He's missing some big players and he lost some important players in pre-season through injury as well, which hasn't helped things. The manner of the goals, the first goal and the third goal especially, would be really concerning though. Mm. Now, in fairness, having watched the back again, he only made a substitution. He was forced into a substitution. He moved Gary Buckley back into centre-back.
Who done well.
He did do well, but probably within 2 or 3 minutes, you know, for a player of Jack Bourne's quality to get a ball, take 2, 3, 4 touches without, yeah. And I think at the end it was 4 Sligo players around him. Nobody even put a hand on him, and he was able to find the bottom corner. And the second goal, the third goal for the run down there, right on the end line. And you know, I think Seymour was running with him and didn't even put the ball over a corner. And it's a little pullback. And again, Aaron Green's an acres of space inside, you know, 8 yards outside in the box, and it's a happy in which killed the game right really off, because even at 2-1. You know, they've, as Dan said, they had done so well in the second half to kind of settle things down and frustrate Rovers really into making changes. And even at 2-1, if they had a stead in the game a little bit longer, you know, thrown the kitchen sink for the last few minutes, they might have got something out of the game.
I definitely think they're due a result. The league position is a bit unfair in them maybe, but having said they're due a result, going up to Derry is not ideal.
No, it's not. They've a tough weekend, in fairness. Derry's a really tough place to go now. You know, it's a big pitch, but in fairness to Liam's teams, like Liam likes to get the ball down and play. It's just a matter of trying to get his best players back as quickly as possible, and not even his best players, experienced players back as well, which will help. And then the problem is, you don't get a result up in Derry, you have a very, very quick turnaround for Waterford on Monday, which is a really, really tough game.
Okay. Well, gents, let's turn our attention to St. Pat's. And yesterday, I had the pleasure of interviewing St. Pat's manager, Stephen O'Donnell. Talk to me on a day-to-day basis, training, Do you have the shorts on, boots on, mucking in yourself, or did you take?
No, I take. I don't get involved really in the sense of participating or that. I'd like to watch. So we have Patrick Craig and Seanie O'Connor who do the coaching and are excellent coaches and very thorough. So we'll have our session sorted and that. And then if I take it backwards step, I suppose, and just watch training, because I think if you're stuck in the middle of it, you don't get to see every part of training. You're more worried about how the session's going. Then obviously if I see things and have things to say, I'll step in. But ultimately, Patrick and Seanie are very good coaches, and I fully believe that coaches and management is a little bit different. So if you're getting two coaches in, you allow them coach, you know, in the sense of, you know, you have them in for a reason. And obviously people you respect and people who you highly rate, you let them go and do what they do best, and that's coaching. And then when you take a little step back, you might see things that you wouldn't see if you're in amongst it and worried about numbers of training or where cones are set out and that, you know. I'd rather just watch and then pick up on things and then obviously have your input throughout the session.
Very interesting to hear from Stephen there. When I was chatting to Stephen, he really, you know, emphasised the point that it's not just him, it's a management team. He reeled off a couple of the coaches there. Alan Matthews involved as well. Is that the sense in St. Pat's that it's a team effort, without sounding too cliched?
Yeah, I think so. It's a club where we all kind of stay in communication quite a bit. Myself and Stephen would speak regarding, you know, players who are going up to the first team and looking at younger players who are trying to bring into the club. It's great to obviously sit down with parents, with the likes of Stephen beside you as first team manager, to kind of say, listen, there's a pathway here and stuff like that. But just from knowing Stephen in the last kind of 6-7 months since he's come into the club, he's that kind of guy. He's just really easy going. He's, you know, we'd speak regularly on bits and pieces, but it's important for any manager, and he's a young manager as well, to have people around him that you can trust and bring in. And obviously Alan Matthews is there in the background now with experience, which is great, someone there for Stephen to lean on. But he'd be very, very close with Patrick Craig. He would have played with him in the UK and stuff like that. He would have grown up through the academies over there and stuff. So, you know, he has someone in there that you can trust, and Seanie as well. Seanie's been there a long time. He's working with the academy as well. So does the whole thing is aligned together, which is fitting really well at the moment.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, because I know that this year they've brought in players like Ben McCormack, Dara Burns on professional sort of contracts. Is this, like, I think Pat's in recent years, maybe you've been trying to work on that link from underage to senior team, and do you feel you're strengthening the foundations a bit there now, that things are changing a bit? Because I you know, Shamrock Rovers have something going on, and I think other clubs probably need to follow on from that, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think at the start of pre-season, I think we had 7 players who would have come through the academy system. And the thing about it is, it's when you're bringing them in from schoolboy clubs, you've got to appreciate the work that the schoolboy clubs have done with these players. It really is fantastic. But I'd like to think we're taking them on again to another level. And if you look at the likes of Brian Maher, who's gone out on loan, Paul Cleary's gone out on loan, Rory Feely was playing in the underage, he left for a year, got into the first team, left, went to Waterford, came back. Luke McNally, Jake Walker, Darren Markey, Jamie Lennon, they've all come through with Pats in the underage over the last few years to get contracts. And that's what we're able to show. And the likes of Dara Burns, Ben McCormack now have gone on professional contracts. There's probably 2 or 3 more who are very close to doing the same. And that's something that the owner wants. He wants us to go out and identify the best talent that we can and work really hard with them, rather than going around the same players over and over. We want to try and produce players through our own academy with good habits, with the same Pat ethos and beliefs that they have and the principles, and someone that actually really cares about the jersey because they've been there for so long.
Looking at this weekend now, Friday night, up to Oriel Park, league champions. Good platform to take, getting 3 points against Cork going up to Oriel.
Yeah, I think it was important. You know, the Shells game could have went either way, in fairness. What Stevie would have been, and he was really disappointed about, was the set piece. You know, to concede a set piece in a tight game like that, especially Shells had started really well with set piece as well, and I think the team knew that. So it was important to get the win last week. We've got to build on that now. It's a tough place to go. Listen, Dundalk, they're the champions. They've gone up to Finn Harps last week and won fairly comfortable as well. So it's a big weekend. I always find when you have 2 games in the course of a weekend, it's important your first game to try and get something out of it, because if you don't, you're under a little bit of pressure. Mm-hmm. And if Derry can go and beat Sligo on Friday, they'll be coming down to Richmond on Monday full of confidence. So it's important that we try and go up to Oriel, get something from the game. And if that's the case, then we can build on that, hopefully, against Derry on Monday.
I think Forrester's looking a bit fitter. I watched Pats on Friday, and I still think goal scoring might be a problem for them. But that was one thing I took away. He definitely looks in better shape.
Yeah, listen, it's really difficult to speak about Chris because a lot of private stuff went on in his life, but I think those who know him really closely well and have worked closely with him over the last year knows some of the difficulties that he's had personally, but he's a great fella. Listen, he doesn't lose his ability overnight, you know. When he's on form, and I know he's starting to show glimpses of that, but I still think there's more in Chris, which is a great sign for the club and the fans, because, you know, already he's getting back to somewhere, and even at that, and he's still miles off, I think, from where he can get to, that he's still one of the best players on the pitch. And when he does finally reach where he's at, I think we're going to see the Chris that, you know, before he went away to the UK.
Oh, certainly, great to see him back, and plenty of positives at St. Pat's. Well, just before we leave you on Air Sport 1, a reminder that we will have live coverage of St. Pat's against league champions Dundalk in Oriel Park this Friday from 7 o'clock on Air Sport 1. Conor Myra, Shane Supple and Paul Curry will be up in Oriel for that coverage. For our Air Sport TV viewers, that is where we leave you, unfortunately. Next Wednesday, normal service should resume with Dan and Johnny Ward back, we hope. For our podcast and YouTube subscribers, plenty more to come in part 3. Hello again, League of Ireland Weekly, Series 4, Episode 5, Part 3, bonus content. Podcast subscribers and our YouTube subscribers. Ger O'Brien, Daniel McDonald are still with us. This is the part of the show where we hear from you, the listener. So I have a couple of questions to throw to the first one. Is Barry McArdle is on the tweet machine. What are the possibilities of being able to watch a match on TV or live stream it if matches are only allowed to be played behind closed doors? Daniel,
we're sitting in a TV studio here at the moment.
I'd like to say I cannot speak on behalf of Air Sport. These decisions are over my pay grade.
Well, we touched on it a small bit earlier on. I'm not so sure. Like, I mean, I love the idea in theory, but in practice, how many people are going to pay to watch a stream of pick your two smallest, you know, your two smallest supported teams, whatever it might be, and then you've got a problem, you know. And if it's meant to like substitute gate revenue in any way, I don't think it would work. It might be bonus income for clubs, but I don't think it's going to get away from the problem that, you know, that whatever they've projected to, I don't think that can really replace it because it's too unpredictable.
And who does it?
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a streaming service last year for Dundalk and Cork games, and I think Shamrock Rovers did one for one of the Europa League ties. And again, it will work for some, it will not work for others. If all the games are at the same time, then people who might, you know, in theory, you know, might only watch one, will naturally only watch one. So I think it opens up problems. I mean, as I said, none of us really know where this is going. And, you know, that's what I'm saying earlier on. You asked me in the first part, you know, when do you stop for? And I guess, I don't know what the answer for that is. You know, you could stop for 2 weeks, but if it gets to the stage where this might be going on for 3, 4, 5, then you get to the stage where you think, do we need to look at options here? But I don't know. Like, I mean, Gerard, like you've been a player, right? So if we are now in these, and it's very hard, I know, to just speculate on this topic, but if the mid-season break went, if the option of the season being extended was raised, I mean, players might have plans, holidays. You know, some people, part of it is like to work over the winter, whatever it might be. Like, there's complications with this, isn't there?
Oh, massive complications. And like we were saying earlier, if they shut it off for 3 or 4 weeks, you might only be missing 3 or 4 games, but does everyone have to stay at home? Mm. Are players allowed to come in and train? Like, you're probably talking 2 to 3 weeks before our players really lose their fitness as well.
Which is a massive
thing. Yeah. All of a sudden, then you're back into 2 or 3 weeks. Teams and managers are going to want 2 or 3 weeks of more training before they go into games again and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot of complications with it. I don't think it's going to be straightforward. Me personally, someone who's been involved in the League of Ireland for such a long time, there's no way I think behind closed doors can work. Mm. I think the league is just too small for that. Unfortunately, it's looking like we're going to head to some sort of a decision that's going to have to be made. But listen, as Dan alluded to earlier, we're going to have to get state funding. We're going to have to go to UEFA and stuff like that to keep things, I suppose, as Dan said, you know, where clubs can meet their expectations.
Meet their projections. I mean, the FAI can't really take a... Let's say, and let's just raise the scenario A, which we don't want, but club doesn't pay their players. The club can say, well, the reason we can't pay their players is that our budgets were approved based on X and we weren't able to play the game. So
I think that would happen.
Yeah, of course. So you would end up down a road here. So I saw the early statements and everyone seems like they're willing to work together, which is encouraging, but they're going to have to because you can't have people heading off in different directions on this. They all have to be on the same page.
Well, it is a case of going into the unknown. Conor Maddock is on Instagram. Gerald, throw this one at you. Could Jack Byrne be the first seven-figure transfer fee to a League of Ireland club? Seven figures, so a million plus. Do the maths for you.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm not sure, being honest with you. Listen, I think he's probably, since Keefatty, the most exciting player that I've seen in the league. And, you know, there's been some really good players since, you know, the likes of things like Richie Towell, Daryl Horgan and people like that. I'm not so sure. I don't think anyone's going to come into this market and pay seven figures just yet. Just the way contracts... I don't know what way his contract is.
I think there's a short answer to that. No. Yeah. And it's because of his contractual situation.
Yeah, I think if he had a three-year contract or something like that and he was ripping up every week, the problem that it is that, you know, you come to the end of next season, someone's going to say, listen, we'll wait a year for you and we'll get you for nothing. Mm. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Will it be a big fee? Yeah, potentially, but I think that's really going to depend on Jack. You look at Graham Bourke's situation and watching the piece last week, Graham seems to be very much comfortable at home playing, and he's able to earn a decent living playing here and playing in an environment and with family and friends that he wants to be in. Jack Byrne might be the exact same, but I'd love him to get another crack going back over, because I definitely think there's more in him and I'd love to see him playing at the highest level possible.
If I was to twist the question, if Jack Byrne is playing in League One or the Championship, how much is he worth?
It's a good question. I mean, it's like, he's played international football. I'm not going to repeat myself and be boring, because it's a question that punters love.
Yeah.
But football is economics. It's based on someone's contract, and that's it. Like, in, you know, how many players move from League One to higher divisions for you know, big amounts? It depends on their age and what their potential would deem to be. I think with Jack, what would count against him probably is that he'd been at clubs in England before. But at the same time, I mean, he could end up being a very good buy for someone as well too. And I think realistically, I think if Jack had moved over the winter, I think he would have been talking about a couple of €100,000. That's what you would have been realistically talking about, because his contract is for the remainder of this season. Now, I don't know if Rovers have tweaked it since, but my understanding of his contract would be that he would go for less this summer in that event. So that type of money, it's sort of, I know what you're saying, how much is he worth? Like, I don't know, players come from outside the England to the, you know, to Scandinavia. Now, at the same time, like Jack Taylor from Barnet, who's in the Irish under-21 squad, went from Barnet to Peterborough for, I think, £500,000 with the option of it rising to £1 million. So there's an element of respect that comes. And yeah, maybe if Jack was playing, and Jack Taylor is maybe 2 years younger than Jack Byrne, maybe. So, I mean, he could be worth him at some stage in his career. He could be worth more than £1 million, definitely. But a player coming from here isn't going to command that money, unfortunately, at the moment.
Okay. Our final question is at Backpost Header on Twitter. Kieran is his name. Player you'll be very familiar with, Jer. Will King Billy be a starter for Scotland at the Euros, or will he be on the bench? That is, providing Scotland qualify and also providing the Euros goes ahead.
Do you know what? He's done really well since he's come in. He's your typical old-style wide player who likes to get on the ball and dribble at people. He likes to play on the opposite side by the looks of things. You know, he can tie a full-back up and not quite quickly with the way he checks the ball and stuff. I think we'll see the best of Billy now when it comes into the better pitches and stuff. You know, I watched him against Shelbourne and he looked bright in the first few minutes, but the pitch was in really poor condition in Talca and it just didn't suit his style of dribbling. He's an exciting prospect for Pats, definitely.
Mm. When there was breaks in play the other day, when he got on the ball, there was a very distinctive Scottish voice in the crowd that was just screaming at him the whole time. Can we clarify? Is this a relation of Billy King? But it was
there's a few jocks now supporting.
It was like the whole thing where, like, underage football, where like a dad just screams at his own son and ignores all. Get in the box, son. Get in the box. It was even Martin Rennie wasn't getting that much of it. Like, it was just Billy King. So it's either a new Scottish contingent supporting Pats or as a family member. I thought you might know. But no, all right.
Well, that brings us on perfectly to our next chat point, super signings. We've touched on King Billy. His name is actually Billy King.
Orange boots. How far do we want to go with this?
King Billy slays the rebels in Inchicore. Yeah. We've been through that. Chris Twardek, how good a signing is he for both?
I think he's been up there. I think if you talk about signings of the season, and there'll be higher profile ones, and he's someone who was at Sligo Rovers, went to Bowes. If people probably, you know, in January we were asked to like name 10 transfers that happened like that, I don't think he would have registered, but he's done very well. And actually in a position where Bowes are pretty strong, like in the wide department, because they have Danny Grant, they've got Callum Thompson back on loan from Wolves, Wade Slater, I think a couple of other players I'm forgetting that can play there as well. Mandrew can in theory play out wide as well. So, but he's been outstanding. I think he's had a role to play, and even against Rovers, where a game that they lost, he really sort of put it up to them. And yeah, I don't know, would you have seen it from him at Sligo Rovers last year? But he's been one of the standouts for me.
No, I wouldn't have seen it, to be honest with you. We would have played him, and I think one matches he didn't start, then he would have played on the right, and it didn't really cause too many problems. But that seems to be the way things go up always at the moment, the last couple of years, the way Keith Long and Trevor have worked, is that they're bringing in players, either young players back from England or players who've kind of bounced around the league a little bit and given them, I suppose, new life into them. And himself, he's done really well. I've been impressed with Malin off Derry.
That's a good man.
I watched him in the first game second game against Finn Harps. He came on and really done well. And just by pure coincidence, I was in Sheffield United the week after, and I spoke to Jack Lester, the academy director, and he was asking, you know, how tough the league is, that they have high hopes for him. So he seems to have got better and better. He seemed to have got a very good goal against Bowes, and he seems to be at the tick of things now.
They say there's no wingers anymore in football, but actually you look at the three we've mentioned, they're actually wingers. If you throw in Billy players, King as well. Yeah. Malin's real out and out wide player, I think. You know?
But Twardock was man of the match in that Dublin derby as well, involved in both goals, so it's great to
see.
He's
an excellent. Another one I was going to mention, and I think Jer shares my view, I think Liam Scales has been really good for Shamrock Rovers, that he's come into two games in an emergency due to substitutions.
He stepped in for Joey
O'Brien.
And done
very well, and Bowes the opening day as well. And then again on Sligo Rovers at the weekend, even just how he steps out and passes the ball, and you know, with that three to back, it really suits them.
He gives a good balance with his left foot. He would have played in that formation for UCD last year. They would have played with a three, and he steps out really well with the ball, really elegantly. And you've also got Neil Ferrugia as well, who's playing as a wing back. You know, Neil has been really impressive in the last kind of 18 months for UCD as well. And I think both of them are going to have big futures. I said it the other night on the telly, is that, you know, Stephen Bradley has done really well. He's gone out and signed quality rather than quantity, and those two are definitely two players who are going to have long, bright futures in the game.
Yeah. It's interesting, like the talk of signing Nathan Adua now. Like, I think Rovers plugged the gap in their squad. Like, the with Gaffney, that extra striker, and probably with Scales, the extra defender, they've plugged the gap. I know the talk over the winter were probably, they started the season a front man down or an extra attacking option down, and they've signed him now. He's ex-Spurs. He's played all around the world.
I'm always very hesitant when someone says, oh, he's ex-Spurs. He's ex-Rangers. Has he made an impact at these clubs? I mean, just because he's on the books
the
doesn't mean that he's going to be fantastic.
But that's the description. Of course, and then, listen, there's plenty of ex-Liverpool.
It's factually correct, but how relevant is it?
But how would you describe, if you were doing a piece, Shane, and Alex O'Hanlon, how would you describe them?
Shelburne left full.
Yeah, would you? No, I wouldn't. I know for a fact you wouldn't. So
No, I do take your point.
Like, it is. I mean, that's the reference point that you need for someone, of course. And some like were longer at clubs than others. You know, Jack Byrne, is Jack Byrne ex-Man City? Is that wrong? I mean, he was there for a number of years, played in the Youth League. Whatever Troy Parrott does for the rest of his life, you know, hopefully he keeps pushing on. But it's just interesting. I think they needed probably an attacker with a bit of pace as well, another option. And I know he's primarily a winger, but they seem to think he can play through the middle, and that's maybe an option that they've needed at times, and maybe in Europe as well, a sort of speed through the middle as an option off the bench rather than Hooban or Kelly, who are excellent. But it's just to have something a bit different.
He looks exciting from him. Yeah. And as Dan said, you would say, like, his pedigree is, I think he played once for Spurs. He's might have bounced around. Yeah. The only concern would be the last couple of clubs. I don't think he
got let go in Israel.
There is a picture of him in a Spurs kit. Like,
yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing that he didn't play for Spurs.
If there's any suggestion he's never been to the ground, I think then we've got a bit of a problem. Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it's probably one of the final pieces to Vinny's jigsaw. And he'll be more confident now with another player as well. Like, you know, John Mountney gets pushed out to the right. Jamie McGrath went. Jamie would have done that at times last year as well. And if they don't have Dan Kelly, you know, there'll probably be a lack of pace on one side.
Well, they brought Kolovic in, the Serb, who came on against Finn Harps and hit the post. And they seem to think he could be a right-sided player primarily. But they just have depth in that area where they didn't have it before, pretty much, as Ger says. So that's been an interesting one.
Well, I did see a YouTube clip. I think Nathan Adua made his Rangers debut, tried an El Rainbow flick, so he's got a bit about him.
Yeah, fullbacks wouldn't like that, of course.
No. Well, a team that has a bit about them, Shamrock Rovers, they welcome Finn Harps this weekend. A foregone conclusion?
Yeah, you would have thought so. I mean, I've actually been pretty positive about Harps the last couple of weeks, and a bit surprised they just got done 4-0 at home by Dundalk. Now, I don't know, I guess maybe mentally some fixtures more than others they're going to target for points, but they did take points off Dundalk already last year. I think Rovers at home and Talla, you know, good surface, good squad. I think Harps has said, they're just not a clear, it's not a sort of foregone conclusion that they're just going to be down the bottom this year. I think they'll be in a relegation battle, definitely. But I think these games aren't the ones where they take points.
That man will be as optimistic as ever.
Yeah, he with that prediction. Tell us we're gone.
Talk to me about Cork Bowls. Neil Fenn under a bit of early pressure?
I'd like to think not, to be honest with you. You know, I don't think when Neil left Longford to take the Cork job, I don't think anyone, including probably Neil, would have foreseen what was going to happen with the squad and stuff like that. He has a lot of young players down there. A lot of trialists have been coming in because we'd known Neil from being on the pro licence. You know, he was trying to try and get experience in during the season. He's taken in some loan players from the UK as well. It's been a rough start, there's no doubt about it. A little bit of a better performance in Inchicore last week. It was important that they got the result against Finn Harps a few weeks ago. I think that helped a little bit. But I think if Neil needs to just get a little bit of momentum, he needs the big players, the likes of the Gerard Morrisseys and stuff like that. Alan Bennett, I know he's not going to probably play too much, but he needs him to be a proper, you know, off the pitch and try and rally the young players. But it's going to take time for a lot of them young players. A lot of them have only played 19s football, so you have to give them a little bit of time. I don't think, from a Cork's point of view, whether that's fans or the people involved in the club, should be looking for anything other than a little bit of stability this year.
You done it last year. How difficult is it to just step in and muck in?
Yeah, it is. It's tough, being honest with you. So he needs time, and Cork need to get behind him. You know, it's a pity to see the crowds have dwindled so quickly. Like, you know, and I know people use the phrase a bandwagon and stuff like that, but it's important that the people of Cork get behind, you know, Neil and in Cork, because, you know, it's a really tough place to go, and no matter what type of Cork side is out. But he'll look at Bowes coming down the weekend. He's got a target points in that game without a doubt.
They're almost the least experienced team down there. That'd be my concern. Like, that'd be my concern for Cork, that they have to learn fast.
Shells Waterford. Shells looking to bounce back from the defeat in the Dublin Derby.
Typical. Straight to the Shells. Straight to the Shells angle. Waterford knocked one in from 35 yards last week against Derry.
Waterford did. But Waterford are an exceptional, talented football team when they want to be.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Waterford relative to, say, even Cork, I mean, listening to Neil Fenn last week, and he's talking about games, they can look for points and Pats are challenging for Europe. And Waterford have beaten Derry and they've beaten Pats. Yep. They've got 3 points. And again, they've won both of the games as well. And 2 great goals last week as well, Sam Bone and Shane Griffin. And that's something. Like, it gives them a bit of a platform into the season, because I think Waterford, you would expect them to, you know, financially they're not necessarily in a great place, but they've won a couple of games. They know how to win, and that'll stand to them. I don't know, Shells Waterford this week.
Game that Shelburne will have to target, because I mean the next one of fixtures for Shells, Waterford at home, Harps away, Sligo away. So realistically, from a Shelburne point of view, they want to stay up this year. So the next 3 games are crucial for them.
I think the big, like I said earlier, the double headers on the weekends are huge. I think Ian Morris will be targeting 6 points this weekend, without a doubt. He'll fancy, you know, beating Waterford and going up to Finn Harps in the rearranged game. I think if it was me and looking, their home form has been okay in the sense of last season as well in the first division. They pushed Dundalk really close. They gave a really good account of themselves second half. They've beaten Pats. I think we'll want 6 points from this weekend.
We've touched on it somewhat earlier though, Derry Sligo.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I thought Sligo, there's encouragement there across the season that they might be okay. It's tough, but Derry have been very in and out. Like, they didn't played really badly against Finn Harps. Then by all accounts, did well against Bowes.
Player turnover there
and
as well.
And then they've gone and lost in Waterford, and Declan Devine said no real complaints about the outcome. So, yeah, you're right, there has been player turnover, but they still have good players there. Sligo need to get a point on the board, but at the same time, Derry, they're contenders for third, but, I mean, there is early season inconsistency, but maybe that inconsistency is just going to be there with all the clubs below the top two. I mean, you sort of have to accept it's just going to be a bit of that with all of them.
Who are the contenders for third then, realistically? Derry, Bowes, Pats?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Looking at that was the case last season as well with those 3 clubs. I do think the other two are just a little bit too far ahead at the moment. But I watched the game, Derry and Finn Harps, and I was actually really surprised. There was just no rhythm to their play. And last year, I would have been a big fan, even playing against them. They came to Inchicore and beat us 3-0, I think, early on in the season, and they were outstanding. And I think Decky's just going to have to try and find that balance at the moment. You're right, there are good players, but that doesn't mean that it's going to tick. And, you know, Conor McCormack's come in from Cork, Conor Clifford's come in from Pats. He's got a new couple of loan players in. Stephen Mallinan started the first couple of games. He started. They've got the boy who played in Figueroa, who played in Waterford as well. Yeah. And he's got the
Tim Nielsen hasn't scored
Tim Nielsen up front, who I know they rate up there from talking to some of the lads. So it's trying to kind of put pieces into the jigsaw and try and get everything to work. It's not easy just to throw 11 players on the pitch and say, right, they're all brilliant, go and play. You have to kind of work. And last year, you had that rhythm and that fluidity to their game and consistency. But I think if they do get a bit of momentum going, I think they'll be right there, thereabouts for the third place.
How long do you think that will take to get that bit of momentum going?
I don't know. I mean, look, we could have an interrupted flow in the season now as well.
Very true.
I mean, this is the thing. So all of those things are up for debate. We do, in theory, have a mad run of games coming anyway, particularly for the European qualifiers. But yeah, we're returning to the team at the start. I mean, we could be having a very different discussion next week, Shane, unfortunately.
Okay, well, we certainly will wait and see what happens. My thanks to the lads. My thanks, as of course, to Dan McDonald and to Ger O'Brien for coming in. Thank you very much. Normal service, we hope, will resume next week with Dan and Johnny, but it is a case of we'll wait and see.